welcome to Hero Pipe, episode 26, the third episode in quick succession that you are getting from us. So hopefully you're not sick of hearing our voices yet, but once this one is done, we'll pretty much be right back on schedule and we'll be back to our usual, schedule of releasing episodes, except this time we'll be weekly. So here is your announcement. From next week, we will be releasing weekly. So if we assume that we'll be recording on a Thursday, you can expect new episodes probably on a Friday from now on. So yay!
So many superheroes.
So little time.
It's true.
Seriously, so little time. So, guys, as always, if you want to get hold of us, you can do so through our Twitter account, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can leave us a comment on this post when it goes up on Hypeable, or you can send us an email, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com. Again, I'm back. I'm Danya, and I am joined by Caitlin once more.
Hello.
Yay. We'll look at getting another guest host on soon, but yeah. Like, I think I said it in the previous episode, we've recorded these in such quick succession that we didn't want to drag anyone else down with us. It's been a very interesting week, guys, and we've still got a couple more episodes left to get to you, so... let's get right down to it. So we're going to kick this off once more with a brief history. And this episode, we are bringing you a brief history of Connor Hawke. So Connor Hawke was born to Sandra Hawke, the illegitimate son of Oliver Queen. Growing up, he suffered at the hands of bullies due to his mixed race. He was part Korean, African American, and Caucasian. This resulted in Connor developing a volatile temper, and his mother was at a loss as to what to do with him. She eventually revealed the identity of Connor's father to him, and Connor began collecting news stories and comics based on Oliver's life. When Connor's problems at school became too much to handle, he was eventually removed to the Ashram Monastery, the same monastery that trained Oliver. Though he focused much of his energy on mastering Zen Buddhist philosophy, Aikido, and Kyudo archery, he still retained a fascination with his father and the Green Arrow's life. This led Connor's master to believe he would eventually follow on the same path as his father. Connor's path eventually crossed with Oliver's after his father's separation from Black Canary, though he didn't reveal his true identity. He teamed up with his father against an almost unstoppable onslaught of villains vying to take out the Green Arrow. Hal Jordan eventually revealed Connor's identity to Oliver, and believing Connor to be plotting against him, the two parted on bad terms. They never reconciled before Oliver's death, and Connor eventually took up the mantle of Green Arrow himself. Spoiler alert, Oliver dies in the comics at one point. But it's okay, he gets better.
Because this is...
comics.
Yeah, exactly. This can happen. Yeah. As we saw on Arrow this week.
Yeah.
So why are we telling you about Connor Hawke? Well, because he's going to be showing up on Legends of Tomorrow. We got a casting announcement that Legends was casting an African-American or biracial male who... quote, decides to put on the uniform of a missing hero who once stood for justice and hope, unquote. So some of the fan sites out there were like, that's interesting. I wonder who that could be. You know who that sounds like? Connor Hawke. So they went to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers confirmed that Connor Hawke would be appearing in the show, but they said that he's not the son of Oliver and Sandra Hawke. So he didn't say whether he was still Oliver's son or if he was someone else's son. So there's all kinds of room for speculation. So with all the time travel thing, he could be Oliver's son from a different partner in the future. He could, because he's biracial, maybe he's Diggle's son from the future. Or there's like the whole Earth 2 thing. So there's a lot of potential, but we will be seeing a version of Connor Hawke in Legends of Tomorrow.
And it'll be nice to see, potentially, if they do cast it, a biracial actor as well, because, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just really interesting that we're going to be seeing a character that's quite heavily linked to the comics, but they may be changing up his origins a bit, because it's really, really nice what they do with the DC TV universe, where they take just enough influence from the comics, but switch it up to make it new and interesting. So I'm looking forward to seeing him, though depending on how heavily he features in the plot, I mean, Legends of Tomorrow is getting pretty character heavy at this point.
Yeah, but if they're jumping around between time periods, they need to populate a time period, and then they'll probably jump to a different time period that they need to populate. So it's not like all these characters are going to be in every single time period that they hit. So.
No, so we could be seeing them in one episode, leaving them, coming back to them later in the season, and then, yeah. Man, that's gonna be, I definitely need to put together some kind of wall chart so that I can keep track of all the timelines.
I know, right?
Yeah.
And then it's going, how does Legends of Tomorrow, the changes that they're inevitably gonna end up making, like, affect Arrow and the Flash, and it's just, oh, my head already hurts thinking about it.
Yeah. We thought Doctor Who had problems. At least the Doctor is moderately responsible in regard to the timelines and fixed points in history that he does or does not change. But I can't imagine that characters like Captain Cold are going to be equally as responsible about changing things within history.
What? Why ever not, Danya? So yeah, we don't have a lot else to go on about that story, just they are still mining the comics for new things to introduce, so it's all very interesting, and I just really want to see what's going on with it.
Yeah, same.
All right, in other DC news, we got some interesting Supergirl casting. So Supergirl has cast Henry Cherney to play Winslow Schott, a.k.a. Toyman. And if you think, gee, isn't there already a Winslow Schott on Supergirl? You would be right. That is Jeremy Jordan's character. This is his father. So there was all this wondering when Jeremy Jordan was cast, if he was going to become Toyman at some point in the series, that he might go down a villainous path. It turns out the villain is actually his father, Winslow Schott Sr. So Warner Brothers is describing the character as a mad criminal genius known as Toyman and Win's estranged father. Toyman weaponizes toys to wreak destruction and revenge, but is ultimately driven by one thing: the obsessive desire to reunite with his beloved son. So that's an interesting twist. They're going a bit of a different direction, which I am intrigued by.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. And it's also, you wrote up the announcement for this as well. And Caitlin's really, really great. If you ever follow her articles on Hyperbole for any of the DC properties, I'm just going to compliment you now. So get ready to blush, Caitlin. She does an amazing job with going through and basically finding the connections to the comics and putting it like really, really succinctly and kind of setting it all out so that you know all of the really important facts linked to these characters. So if you're ever like interested in casting announcements and how they link to the comics, Caitlin always does an amazing job in her articles, so you are never kind of left wondering. So there you go, complimenting over.
Well, thank you.
But Winslow Schott in the comics, as Caitlin really awesomely wrote about in her article, he does this like little moment where he like kidnaps a load of children, which, considering his like villain name as Toyman, is incredibly sinister. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they link all of the characters together, other than just with Jeremy Jordan's character. In the comics, he has a connection to Cat Grant because he kidnaps Cat Grant's son, Adam.
So, and they've already cast his son.
Yes. So
maybe they're going there.
They may go there. There may be a underlying connection somewhere there. Oh, it'll be so interesting to see how they spin this, because yeah, I've always thought Toyman was quite sinister, like his name versus what he actually does. It's kind of like a little bit creepy, and Ah, oh, so excited.
Yes, I'm intrigued by this. He's only booked for one episode so far, but we'll see if that comes back at any point. But I'm interested to see where that goes, because if you look more in-depth in the connections with Cat Grant, including the comics version of Toyman also has a son with a different name who becomes a supervillain as well, mm-hmm. who also becomes obsessed with Cat Grant. And it's super creepy, and the whole thing seems a little darker than Supergirl's tone is going for, but I'll be interested to see how dark they get with this, because it gets really dark.
Ah, I'm so ready for, like, episode 2 onwards. Just give me all of it already. I'm being really impatient because I saw the pilot so long ago, so I'm just like, now that it's... Obviously, we're going to be recapping Supergirl in a bit, but now that it's here, I'm like, yes, finally! We will have so many answers to all of the questions that we've been going over for the last God knows how many weeks. But, yeah.
Get in my eyeballs!
Yeah, my body is ready. DC wasn't the only one with some casting news, though. Agent Carter Season 2 has a new cast member. Kurtwood Smith has joined them in what they have called an important recurring role. So Smith is going to be playing Vernon Masters, who will be a member of the War Department with a keen understanding of how to work the system. So, they have commented a little bit on his character. So they have said, when we were developing the character of Vernon Masters, we wrote it with him in mind. We just never thought we could actually get him. Thankfully, we were wrong. They also said, we've been fans of Kurtwood's work for years. That type of range makes him a perfect addition to our cast for Peggy's second thrilling solo adventure.
Speaking of get in my eyeballs.
Yes, I know, right? But we've still got a little bit of time before Agent Carter is back. That's going to be in the new year at some point. But, this is not a character from the comics that I can recall. So, yeah, original characters in TV series. Always interesting territory to be going down, because then you have nothing to base them on. So,
and that's sometimes a good thing, because yes. It makes us just as surprised as everybody else.
Yeah, it's... I think I've said it before, but it's really great for me because they can catch me unawares. Like, if there's something vaguely related to a comic book, then I can usually figure out roughly what's going to happen in something. And that can sometimes take the surprise out of things, which isn't as much fun. But when you throw in random characters into the mix that nobody knows anything about, then, always exciting. And last bit of news, because we don't have a massive amount. Finally, you guys, we got the Jessica Jones trailer.
Oh my gosh!
Hallelujah!
So good.
Oh, and only a very small amount of what was in the trailer is in the pilot. A lot of that, for me, was also new footage. So there's an interesting little bit. They have mixed it up quite a lot with what was available to them. They haven't done what a lot of shows do and just almost exclusively use what they've got from the pilot and cut it interestingly to just make it seem like it's from across more episodes. No, this has got footage from several episodes in there. I can confirm that because I remember pretty much everything from the pilot in excruciating detail, because I was just like staring at the screen like with my jaw dropped, like, this is amazing.
Well, it makes sense that it would be cut from multiple episodes, since most shows all they have to go on is the pilot, because they film and then air as they're going, whereas they did these all and they're dumping them all on November 20th, so they had all the episodes to work from.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes some shows will have a couple of episodes in, like, the bank to be like, they'll at least have some edited footage from some future episodes that they could or could potentially use. But yeah, it is a lot easier for them seeing as everything drops at the same time. But what did you think? What was your reaction to the trailer?
Incoherent noises, because it was amazing and super dark.
Mm.
And I'm really excited to see where they go with this, because this is just the sort of story that we haven't really seen before. And we don't see very much of the psychological effects of dealing with everything that superheroes go through. And I'm really fascinated to see where this goes, because so much of the time this is what gets swept under the rug in this kind of, this genre.
I can say of the pilot episode, without giving anything away necessarily, is that the themes of Jessica Jones that are in the comics that are really hard-hitting and difficult to deal with on an emotional level, they were in the pilot episode, the first episode at least, treated very sensitively and written extremely well. Like, you can tell that there is a woman working on this show. You can tell that she's heavily influenced how Jessica Jones comes to the screen, and how, because while some of the abuse that Jessica suffered was more mental than actually physical, there are some aspects to it that are really twisted and dark. Now, if you were a fan of David Tennant as Doctor Who, like, there is zero trace of any goodness in this character. Like, there is no disputing that this guy is a terrible guy who does really terrible, messed up things. And even from the little that you see of him in the first episode, you get that immediately, that this is not a guy to be messed with, and there is no redemption for this guy. Full stop. He is not a Shades of Grey character where you can feel some sort of, fond emotion for him in certain ways, or at least kind of see, his view on things the way that you could with Kingpin in Daredevil. This is like a completely irredeemable bad dude. So,
That must be so much fun to play as an actor.
Yeah. I can imagine, but man, I'm so ready. Like, I've cleared that whole weekend. I was potentially going to be going to visit friends, and then I was like, I checked in with them to be like, are you interested in Jessica Jones? Are you going to watch it? And they were like, maybe not really, but maybe one or two episodes when it releases. And I was like, lol, okay, we're postponing our plans to next weekend then, because I need to watch the whole thing. And they were like, oh, that's okay, that's fine. Because they know me. They know me pretty well. We've known each other for about 10 years, so it's fine. But I was just like, yeah, I've cleared that entire weekend to just watch the whole show in one
priorities. In one.
Definitely. Because when Daredevil dropped, I was moving house, so I couldn't watch it all in one go. I was kind of packing my stuff into boxes and kind of half watching Daredevil and trying to pack and then getting distracted. This time around, I have nothing to distract me. I'm just going to eat a lot of pizza. A lot of pizza and watch this from start to finish. So,
so excited.
Yeah. And as we did with Daredevil, we'll probably do a special episode, maybe get a couple of people on. We'll do like spoiler-free reactions to it in the first little part of it, and then we'll go full-on spoiler-filled once we've both watched the whole thing.
And stopped squealing.
Yeah. Oh, man. Right. So that's TV news out of the way. Time to get into episodes of all of
speaking of squealing.
Yeah. What are we gonna start with?
Shall we start with Supergirl?
Yeah, let's start with Supergirl.
All right, so what is there to say about Supergirl?
Do you know what that made me think of? You know the Mean Girls thing? It's like they're talking about Regina.
Oh, yeah. What is there to say about Regina George? Okay, so Supergirl, our pilot, is the first thing that struck me just kind of looking back at it is just ladies. Ladies are everywhere. Ladies are at the heart of the show. Ladies are in charge. Ladies are good guys. Ladies are bad guys. Ladies are everywhere. And I love all the ladies being everywhere.
Agreed. It is very, very female heavy. And that's only a really good thing. For me, I loved every single character, whether I necessarily agreed with their views or not, whether they were cast in shades of grey or whether they were on the side of good or evil. They were all, they've all been set up as being really interesting, nuanced characters as they're developed over the show. So give me more ladies.
All the ladies. And I think what I really love is that we know going into this show that there were these really two attractive guys who were going to have varying degrees of interest in Kara, in James Olsen and Wynn, but they're sort of sidelined in the pilot. It's so much more about her relationship with Alex and kind of what their sisterly bond is. And I appreciated that so much. It was so much more family oriented and sisters propping each other up. And I thought that was wonderful.
Agreed. Completely agreed. And I hope that's something that continues to be developed through the entire season, because I always have a major interest in family bonds and family relationships, whether they are very strong, very great, very close relationships, or whether they're slightly more fraught and a kind of more drama-filled, like Oliver's relationship with his family. But with Kara and Alex, it's a much closer, much more loving, much more supportive relationship that they've got going. And I guess that's because they've grown up together. They haven't had massive things thrown in their way, except for right now. So Yeah,
and Alex even has her own little mini arc through the episode. You know, obviously the main thing is Kara becoming Supergirl, but Alex has her own arc where she has to reveal that she works at the DEO, and Kara feels very betrayed by this because she never told her, and, you know, they're, like, hunting aliens, and Kara's an alien. And then they have that wonderful scene where she confesses that she has always felt like she was in Kara's shadow because Kara has superpowers, basically, and that Kara not using her powers sort of made her feel better. And it's not a pretty feeling, but it seems very realistic that someone might feel like that, but then is able to push that aside and be the one that really pushes Kara to be the one to actually defeat the villain, because she's like, I can't do it. And then it's Alex's support on the other end that pushes her to do it. So that little arc that Alex goes through, I thought was really solid too.
Yeah, I really like Alex as a character. And the thing is that feeling of inferiority when you kind of, whether it's someone you're related to or not, when you start comparing yourself to another person, whether that's in your career, within a hobby, within anything in your life, they may even be a very close friend, but that feeling of inferiority, which sometimes can, like, almost slip into resentment and jealousy sometimes, even if it's not something that will damage the relationship to a point where it's, like, not repairable at all. Like, that's so human. That's, yeah, it's just such a beautiful thing to explore, because in this instance, it's something very super in regard to Kara's powers, which is, you know, not something particularly that we would deal with in our everyday lives, but, you know, comparing, like, if you're an artist, comparing your artistic ability to someone else who may be younger than you and their skill in your eyes is greater than yours. Like, it's everywhere. So it's really cool that they're going to be tackling that, because it's something that a lot of women deal with, is comparing yourself to other women and finding yourself coming up short. But if they're able to push them past that and have them support each other and build each other up, it's an amazing message that we'll be sending to girls who are going to be watching this, because so many young girls are going to be watching this show. You can tell from the way that maybe sometimes their message of female empowerment can get a little heavy-handed, but when you think about it and you think about who this is going to be doing amazing, like what this show is going to be doing amazing things for and who it's going to be doing amazing things for, you know, sometimes that slightly more heavy-handed message is, it's required. Because we don't have a lot of shows out there that are, like, very girl-friendly, building them all up and being like, this is great, you can be a hero, you can stand on your own, and look at all these amazing ladies around you also building you up. You know, we don't have a lot of that. There was never anything massively like that when I was growing up. And competition between ladies is so fierce sometimes, because in the media, we're always pit against each other, whether it's in a relationship stance or whether it's within careers. But the fact that this could do so many great things for so many girls, whether you're older or whether you're younger, like, that's where a lot of my excitement for Supergirl is coming from. And whew, I'm going to take a breath and calm down a little bit. But I'm just, I've been holding this in about the pilot for, like, so long, but I was so happy with it. So happy with it in so many ways that I'm so glad I can finally talk about it. Oh, your turn.
Well, I guess another place to talk about is Melissa Benoist, and do we like her as Kara? I think she is adorable and infectious and charming. And I don't know what they're putting in the water when people were working on Glee, but apparently they make adorable superheroes on the Glee set. So I thought she was wonderful. Did you like her? Do you think she's a good choice?
Yeah, I think she's an amazing choice for Kara. Like you said, there was something in the water over on the Glee set. Like, this is the second amazing casting choice that they've made from the Glee alums. And just the moment where she sees herself on TV when she's saved the plane and they've got that footage of her and she's literally radiating happiness and kind of just everything to do with that, and she's jumping up and down and super excited. That was the moment where I was like, yes, this is fantastic. She's such a great character. Because if the first time that you've used your powers in public, like, you get, like, that kind of euphoria of what you've just achieved after hiding for so long, it's such a genuine, beautiful reaction, and I loved it. And then loved every moment since, and I loved every moment before it as well, let's be real.
It's all love. It's a love fest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's great and adorable, and I love her as well. So we've talked about Alex, and we love Alex. Another lady in the show is Cat Grant, who is like the Miranda Priestley of the show.
Oh, I love that you've made that reference. I really love The Devil Wears Prada a lot.
I do too.
Yeah.
I don't know why this stuck out to me, but like in her first scene where she comes in, it's very much The Devil Wears Prada and is like complaining about her elevator. My favorite thing she does is when she's like, you know, find whoever used my elevator and reprimand them or have them bathed. I don't care which. It cracks me up.
It was brilliant. I loved it. She's so, like, the comedic timing is just so spot on. She just delivered every line flawlessly. Because some of it, you kind of stop and think, that's completely ridiculous. Like, that would never happen. But the delivery of it made you believe completely that this is a real thing that's happening and this is how she deals with it. Like, I thought it was great. Take charge, woman, that is just fantastic and just doesn't accept any bullshit from anyone.
I really love that she is fierce and determined, and, you know, she's as fierce as you would think a man in her situation would be. So I love that she's unapologetic about it. But I also was kind of intrigued by the fact that she comes up with the Supergirl name because she's trying to recreate what the Daily Planet has with Superman, which I'm not sure why that didn't occur to me. But once that was explained, that the Daily Planet is able to put Superman on their cover for like more than half their issues and it makes them a lot of money. So she's looking for something similar. I was like, that's brilliant. Of course she would be obsessed with that. So she comes up with the name to link Supergirl with her company forever. And I think that is brilliant. And I was not anticipating that term, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah, it was a stroke of genius on her part. It's like marketing genius. So yeah, she knows her industry and she knows how to get readers and she knows how to capitalize on a situation. And whether or not you believe that that exploitation is a good thing or not in regard to being able to sell more papers and keep all of those people in jobs, you know, you have to admire her for her guts and her sheer ovaries to do it.
So I guess one of the other things that kind of took the world by storm with Kat is her girl speech. And there were a lot of people who were like, I love it. And there were people that were like, that's really dumb. But the whole reclaiming the word girl. And on a practicality level, they have to do that if they're going to acknowledge that they're bringing this character into the modern era. But they're not going to rename her Superwoman because that's a different character. So they're using the actual character and that is the character's name. But then they need an in-world reason that they wouldn't call her Superwoman. So I quite enjoy that speech. I think it's smart and also sassy. But I know some people aren't super big fans of it. What did you think, Danya?
I mean, initially, and I've rewatched the episode since then, initially I was like on the fence, sort of slipping into the territory of I'm not sure if I like this or not, because using girl to refer to a woman is often a way that society can kind of make you seem less mature than you are. Like, it kind of pushes you backwards almost. So it's a way of like pushing you down. So I wasn't entirely sure how I felt about it. But going back and rewatching it and understanding that they needed to use that name, that's her name from the comics. And while Kara in the comics became Supergirl when she was quite young, it's not something that they would be able to change because that is the character. So as far as an in-world explanation goes, it's the best one that they could have come up with, but I'm still kind of on the fence about how I feel about it completely. But I honestly can't think of another way that they could have got around it.
Yeah, and there's a great moment in the lead up to that speech where Kara is like upset that she's come up with that name. And she's like, don't you understand how important this is? We can't minimize it. So it's being like, that's showing to me that the people who are behind the show are very cognizant of the significance of this show and the effect that it's having. And they're saying, we know that we shouldn't be diminishing anything here, and we're not. And I like that essentially they're saying that, you know, the word girl can be used derogatively and it shouldn't be because there is nothing wrong with it. And it's associating a word that can have negative connotations when said in certain contexts with strength and just heroics and power. And I think that's great.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. I really like that. Oh, Caitlin. No, that's true. Like I said, sometimes the execution of it can sometimes not come off as well as maybe they hoped. I haven't rewatched the final cut of it, I will say. I've seen I've seen it, like, from the copy of it that I've got from, like, way earlier this year. So, you know, maybe they have changed a couple of things in nuances of what they've said. They may have filmed pickups and changed some scenes slightly. So it'll be interesting for me, actually, to go back and rewatch it again, but with, like, the final version of it, because now I'm wondering if some of the lines have changed.
I don't know, I've only seen the final version.
yeah, because you have more patience than me.
That's true. I do.
You do. You really, really do. I was so impatient.
But I also didn't want to have to wait until for 5 months for a new episode, so yeah. I put up with it.
it's not been fun.
But yeah, so on the fence about the speech, I do think it's about as good an in-world explanation as you can come up with, because that's the character, so you gotta go with the character.
Yeah.
I guess moving from the ladies, you got the dudes, and there are a couple of very handsome dudes that we meet in the show. You've got Kara's best friend, Wynn, played by Jeremy Jordan, and you've got the dreamy James Olsen. He doesn't go by Jimmy anymore, and he's won a Pulitzer. So, hello. So what do we think of the guys that are surrounding Kara?
While I like both of them very much, Wynn had a couple of moments where I was just a little bit like, oh, slightly problematic male character alert alarms going off, and just the way he treated Kara a little bit, and his almost nice guyish pursuit of her, like, rubs me up the wrong way, because guys have done that to me before and I hate it. I hate that almost looming expectation that because they treat you a certain way, you need to, like, reward them. And so it kind of rubbed me up the wrong way a little bit. But I do understand that this is just the pilot, and that could be very purposeful on their part in order to kind of redeem him as the show goes along and change him and give him a really interesting character arc in regard to his, I guess, just his character in general. So,
yeah, when they're on the roof and she's confessing her path that she was the woman who saved the planet, he's like, you're a lesbian, that's why you're not into me. Like, oh god, you went there.
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
That was really cringeworthy for me. That moment was just like, oh no, no.
Like, no, she's not into you because she's not into you. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I did appreciate that, you know, he's involved with the costuming montage, and it's never sexualized at any point. It's very much like, how can we make this, like, aerodynamic or bulletproof or something? And I did like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did really enjoy that scene as well. That's actually one of my favorites. I thought it was very sweet, very well done, and yeah, both of them. That's the kind of dynamic that I hope we'll keep getting. I really, really like them as friends. I think their friendship dynamic is really, really great. I just hope that eventually he realizes that, I guess, Kara doesn't feel that way about him, and that's just the way it is. There's no excuses for it. There's no particular reason why. It just is, and he can accept that, and they can continue with this really great friendship that they have.
I just had the thought that he's the Xander to Kara's Buffy and cringed.
Oh no.
But on a happier note, there was Mr. James Olsen, who has just come into Catco to be the art director, and we eventually find out that Superman asked him to come look after Kara. Maybe not look after, but look out for, which was kind of cute. And I adore him. I think he's very sweet and charming and just warm as a human being. And I was very, very taken with him.
Same. Same, 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 same. He was just fantastic all the way through. He was charming and sweet and incredibly successful. And he did this whole thing through the episode where you knew through the whole episode that he knew more than he was letting on, and it was great. But he didn't reveal his hand too soon. He let Kara come to, like, realizations and conclusions on her own by, like, very subtly dropping in some sage advice here and there in conversations that seemed completely normal. And I thought it was very smooth. He was very, very good.
But not smooth in a gross way.
No.
Like, a good way.
Yeah, because there was no expectation there. He wanted Kara to find her footing on her own and kind of come to conclusions on her own. So it just, yeah, it was just really well done.
He's not in a ton of the episode, but obviously I'm sure he'll be significantly more featured now that Kara has decided that she's going to be Supergirl. But I am looking forward to seeing more of him because I was very much loving him.
Yeah, I can see him becoming a very big and firm favorite throughout the entirety of Supergirl. So, yeah.
Yeah, so he's wonderful. Who are the other characters? There's Director Henshaw at the DEO, who we also don't know very much about, other than he's not all that nice of a guy.
Understatement. He's a bit of a jerk. He can join the not very nice guys club with some of the other guys from other shows that we relegated to those roles in the last episode of the podcast.
So, but we don't have very much to go on with him. We just know he's the boss at the DEO, and he gives some of the background on why the DEO was formed, and he tells Alex that she was recruited because of her sister. But then he does have a nice moment where he's like, but it's because of you that you stay here. So that was one brief little moment where he wasn't a total jerk.
Yeah, yeah. Very brief.
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll see more of him and get to know more about him as we go. And then we had our villain of the week, which kind of ties into this whole reveal that when Kara's pod comes out of the Phantom Zone, it pulls along this ship with all these convicts in it, and they land on Earth when she does, and that's why the DEO was started in the first place. So Kara is going to end up fighting all these convicts. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, it sets up the rest of the season, or potentially multiple seasons, because you don't know how many have escaped onto Earth. Have some of them been dealt with by Superman previously? Have the DEO dealt with some of them as well? Like, we don't know how many there are, and whether there's one that maybe slightly more than Kara can handle, and maybe he or she, potentially whatever villain it may or may not be, could end up being a very, very big recurring villain through everything.
And an interesting twist there was that Kara's mother was the judge that sentenced these criminals to their sentence, and that's why the villain for the first episode was out to get her, because of her mother. So I thought that was an intriguing twist.
Yes, very, very good. And a very nice link back to Kara's family and her history on Krypton before, obviously, she was sent after her cousin.
And I guess the final thing to talk about with this was the reveal at the very end of our big bad. And I don't think anyone would guess who it was going into it, because I was like, wait a second, did that just happen? Am I seeing what I'm seeing? So we hear that this general is coming, and so the general is this imposing presence that's all these convicts are afraid of, and it turns out to be not only Kara's aunt, but the twin sister of her mother.
Dun, dun, dun.
Because we need some soap opera elements.
Of course we do. Of course we do. I thought that was a really, really great reveal. Like, I thought that was fantastic. And I love the fact that this villain is linked to Kara so closely. But not only that, it's also a woman. Like, this imposing force that everyone is terrified of is this hugely powerful and strong woman. And it just sets up that we've got women all across the spectrum here, from good characters to characters who are kind of ambiguous and one way or the other, and then evil characters. Like, it's just great, because it just kind of goes to show that when we want representation, we don't want these strong female characters in regard to we just want one kind of character. We want all kinds of female characters. Bad guys, good guys, morally ambiguous guys, like women, anti-heroes. Like, we just want as much choice as everyone else.
Exactly. I really loved it too. So overall, 2 thumbs up for the Supergirl pilot from me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Loved it. Same. Can't wait for more. So.
Yes.
Happy sigh. All right. So we can kind of a little more quickly talk about some of the episodes of our other shows. Shall we do The Flash?
Yeah, let's go for it.
So The Flash was also family-oriented, jumping off from the last family discussion. This one essentially introduced us to the father of Leonard and Lisa Snart, and he is not a good guy. So the kind of plot of this episode is that he implants a bomb in Lisa's head and then uses that to force Leonard to work a job with him. And so Lisa comes to Cisco and the Star Labs team for help. So there are some interesting dynamics going on, and Papa Snart is really awful, and Captain Cold's kind of stuck in the middle of it all. But we really see how dedicated he is to his sister and how he would do anything for her.
Yeah, and this is the thing as well, is that it doesn't matter, like, in regards to family-based relationships. For me, it doesn't matter if those characters are kind of good guys or bad guys, necessarily. I really find it interesting just to see the dynamics and what people will do in order to protect the ones that they love on both sides. Like, I just think it's really, really interesting, especially because on the other side, we kind of see the stuff with Joe and Iris and the fact that her mum is back. So it was just a really interesting parallel to be playing in this episode that I thought worked really, really well.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of Iris and Joe, Joe comes clean to Iris about what's been up with her mother. So that gives us, that gives the audience also some exposition, because we're all going, where has Mama West been all this time? And it turns out she was a drug addict. And after multiple times of her putting Iris, who's very, very young, in danger, Joe got her into rehab, and then she ran away. And as the wife of a cop, she knew how to disappear and was gone. So Joe didn't know if they'd ever see her again and didn't want to put a big burden on Iris, so said she was dead.
As you do.
And Iris eventually forgives him.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It was a beautiful moment where she was just like, I understand why you did it, and I forgive you. And it's just, it was just such a nice moment, because I really love the family dynamic with them. And it was also great because typically with this kind of storyline, it would get overblown in a kind of, I can't believe you did that. Oh my God, I'll never forgive you. I'm done with you, and blah, 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 blah kind of way. And it didn't, which is, it was just such a beautiful moment, because you could tell, like, it was so filled with emotion, that scene, and I just was choking up along with them.
Yeah, and Joe has a great scene with Barry before he comes clean to Iris, where he essentially asks for Barry's advice about what to do, which shows how much trust and love there is between the pair of them. And Barry essentially is like, tell her, and Joe does, but I love their relationship, and it's wonderful.
The little bit where he was like, did he say something along the lines of, like, you're a really good son?
Yes!
And I just, oh my god, I just about died. I was, like, there going, oh, my heart. Oh!
Yeah, it was so sweet. I love it. And I love them. But yeah, so one of the other dynamics we see is Lisa and Cisco, and Lisa's always been very flirty with Cisco, and Cisco kind of likes her despite himself.
Yeah.
And she comes directly to him to ask for help with Leonard, and they continue to have kind of a flirty relationship, and in the moment that he's getting ready to take the bomb out of her head and could almost kill her, they have this really genuine moment, and he gets her to open up about their father being abusive and really horrible, and Leonard being the one to raise her, and I mean, he gets genuine emotion out of her, and it's really sweet.
God, it was beautiful. It was so nice, and I really, really liked it. I think, yeah, it was just a nice relationship, because just the trust that she placed in Cisco's hands with what he had to do in order to save her, like, her life was essentially Cisco's to save or end. Like, that's what it came down to, is that whether she lived or died, it was going to be by Cisco's hand. And that's a lot of trust and a lot of responsibility to place on someone, because obviously Cisco feels quite fondly for her and likes her quite a lot. And if it hadn't gone right, like, the emotional burden on him, because he may or may not have been responsible for her death, that's a lot to put on someone as well. That kind of knowing that she trusts him enough that whether she lived or died by his hand, she would be okay with that. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, considering who she is.
Yeah.
And then she has that cute moment where waits to say goodbye to him, and she tells him that he's her only friend.
Oh my god. I just about died. I was just like that going, oh.
I love them. I think they're adorable, and I can totally get behind them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of into that ship quite a lot. Like, that ship is sailing for me.
I wasn't, like, super into it before. I thought the teasing flirting was cute, but this episode kind of solidified it for me.
Yeah, I hope we see her come back and we see more of them interacting, because I'd really like that.
So there's a scene where Barry visits Leonard in prison and essentially is like, there's good in you, and he's like, you crazy, but this is clearly meant to be, you know, why Leonard would be willing to be a member of the team in Legends of Tomorrow in the first place. So we know that kind of Heatwave comes along with him and is going to listen to what he does because he's the boss. But we need a reason that Leonard Snart himself would actually be willing to put up with the idea. And we're clearly seeing the setup here.
Yeah, which was really cool, because obviously it does need a little bit of build up and a little bit of introduction from one show into the other. Like they did. It's like backdoor pilots, kind of. So like they did with Arrow and The Flash, because obviously Barry ended up there first before moving into his own show. So I like it when they do that, because it starts introducing you to some of the core characters. You get a feel for them. You get an idea of where they stand, who they are as people, and kind of how they're going to fit into this new universe, this new storyline, separate from all of the characters they've interacted with so far. So it's good. I'm glad that we're seeing those threads coming through.
Same. All right, any other thoughts on The Flash?
No, we are good. We can move over into our other DC show.
All right, so Arrow this week brought the love of my life back to life, as well as featured J.R. Bourne in a delightfully sadistic role. And then Felicity got sick of Oliver's and Diggle's crap, and she was like, if you two don't stop bickering, I'm turning this car around and we're going home, basically.
Yeah.
So, I guess we could start with J.R. Bourne, who played Jeremy Tell, a.k.a. Double Down, who is a metahuman who was apparently getting a tattoo at the time of the particle accelerator explosion. That's why that's his power. And he can pull playing card tattoos off his skin and use them as deadly projectiles.
Yeah, it wasn't as gruesome as I thought they might go. But then again, I think you were the one who was like, that wouldn't be too surprising because it doesn't air as late as some other shows to kind of really push the boundaries. But, you know, it's still pretty cool. I really liked how they worked with his powers, but I just, J.R. Bourne is just fantastic, whatever he kind of turns his hands to. Like, I love him in Teen Wolf. I loved him in Stargate as well. Like, he's just so good all the time. Like, whatever character, even if he's given very little to a lot of really heavy, really great material, he's just a joy to watch, no matter what he does. Did you enjoy him?
I loved him. Thought he was great. I was like, Papa Argent, my love. And they left his fate open that he could come back. He's locked up in Iron Heights in their new metahuman wing.
Yeah.
So we may see him again. That'd be cool.
That would be really cool. I really would love to see him back. I just want to see more J.R. Bourne on my TV.
Always.
Always.
But he kind of tied into the plotline with Damian Dark and Oliver and Diggle. So we start seeing Oliver goes off on one mission, which ended up being to fight Double Down. But in the meantime, Diggle gets a visit from an Argus agent who said that Lila asked him to dig into his brother's death, and he finally got around to it because not his priority. So he's finally showing up, and he gives Diggle the identity of the person who ordered his brother's death, and it's a woman named Mina Fayad, and she is luckily coming into town to meet with Damian Dark, and she brings Double Down with her. So Diggle is going out to find her and get some answers, but of course, that doesn't go well the first time he's spotted and the whole thing is compromised. In the meantime, Oliver gets his butt kicked by J.R. Bourne. So they reconvene, and that's when Felicity is like, I am done with this. Like, I am done with your problems, so fix it. And I was just enjoying her sassiness again.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great that someone finally was like, look, I get that you guys have issues. It's understandable, like, that you're kind of, like, not okay with each other right now, or at least Diggle's not okay with Oliver right now. However, from a professional standpoint, in regard to protecting the wider population of this city, would you just get your shit together and actually work together professionally at least? Because there's more at stake here than just you two and your personal relationship. So it was just nice to, like, for someone to give them a little bit of a reality check as well. Just to be like, look, can you guys just please stop?
Yeah, exactly. So I enjoy that, and I liked the conversation that they have, and Diggle just kind of reiterated what he was mad about, and Oliver's like, I know you can't trust me, I'm looking for a chance to earn it, which was, I thought, the exact right thing to say.
Yeah, because there's nothing Oliver can do to take back what happened last season, and there's no excuse, really, for what he did last season as well. I mean, rock in a hard place, I guess, but what he still did was terrible and put Diggle and the people that Diggle cares about most in a really difficult position and a really dangerous position. And that's not easy to forgive. And that's fine and understandable, but yeah, it's potentially getting to see them on the mend, even if it's only slightly, and at least on Diggle's side, he's a little less hostile, so that they can work together. That's something that I would like to see, just so that we can start, like, transitioning into Oliver starting to earn that trust back.
Agreed. I don't think I could have gone another episode with them being completely at odds. And they were enough on good enough terms by the end of the episode that the OTA could get drinks together. So,
yeah.
I love Felicity, like, we're the original gangsters, the original Team Arrow.
Oh, Felicity.
So funny. So that was good. But that lead goes nowhere, because Damian Dark has Mina Fayad killed, so really all there's left to do is start over. Sorry, Diggle.
He just can't catch a break.
But now they know, Oliver knows that they're dealing with the same enemy, so that's going to be helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of what happened in Star City. And I guess the other thing was Felicity was getting weird interference on her phone. I wonder where that's coming from.
Dun, dun, dun.
Spoiler alert, it's Ray. Uh-oh. And she interacted more with Curtis, who is adorable, and yeah, he had a T-sphere, so he's not so subtly becoming Mr. Terrific, so.
Yeah, which is really cool. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. I think he's a really great addition to the cast. I like the actor a lot. I think he's really fun.
He's adorable.
He really is. He almost has, with him, the same kind of spirit, the same kind of on-screen chemistry with, like, everyone he interacts with that Felicity did for me, which is why I, like, connected with her so immediately. Like, there's a similarity in how they react to the characters around them that I really enjoy watching, so I can see him becoming another firm favorite for me.
Same. I am enjoying him very much so far.
Yeah.
All right, so the other part of the episode, we head to Nanda Parbat and to see my least favorite person on the planet, Malcolm Merlyn.
Oh, God.
I hate him so much. Oh, I hate him so much. Even John Barrowman's prettiness can't save how awful Malcolm is. Oh. But Laurel and Thea head to Nanda Parbat and they bring Sarah's dead body that we saw last week. And Laurel's like, put her in the Lazarus pit. And Malcolm's like, no. And Nyssa, shocking a lot of people, was like, I agree, don't do that. So Laurel's not happy about that. But Nyssa's calling her out on being selfish and not thinking about Sarah, about her, what she would be coming back, because the Lazarus pit's never been used on somebody dead. So, were you surprised that Nyssa was against it?
Not really, no. I think knowing what the effects of the Lazarus pit are in regard to how it affects people who aren't dead, thinking about what it could do to the woman that she loved, and that woman becoming someone unrecognizable and potentially doing things that were Sarah in her right mind, she would never dream of doing. Like, I think that's a powerful motivator for being like, yes, her death was devastating to a lot of people, but the person who will come back isn't necessarily going to be the Sarah that we put into the ground. Like, it wasn't entirely surprising. I think she even shocked herself that she was agreeing with Malcolm, like, but it's until we see Sarah completely, like, we got, like, a little bit of it, and we got some in the promo for next week, which, oh my god, that episode looks like it's gonna be devastating.
Oh my god.
But, you know, it's kind of like, what do you do when the person who comes back isn't the person that you thought they were? Like, is it a temporary thing? Is it just the initial shock from coming back from being dead for so long? Is it just difficult to transition back into being alive again? Or is this going to be, like, a reoccurring thing where she kind of almost goes feral. And what do you do?
We've seen with Thea, and Thea wasn't even dead when she went in.
Yeah.
Which Malcolm confirmed. We hadn't been 100% sure, but Malcolm confirmed it in this episode that Thea wasn't dead when she went in. She was very close, but wasn't there yet. And she needs to kill people to sate the bloodlust. He essentially tells her that the only way to fix the effects are essentially to kill the person who hurt you, and she can't do that because Roz is dead, though I would argue that it's actually Malcolm.
Yeah, it's kind of like, how loose is the interpretation there? Because that would be an interesting thing to see play out.
I mean, if Sarah can just kill Malcolm and that would make her better, like, totally here for it. So, yeah, Malcolm refuses and then talks to Thea and is like, you have to kill people to get over the bloodlust. And Thea's like, hell no, you suck as a father. So he makes up a story about them going to see a sage up in the mountains and obviously was lying about it and sends a couple of assassins for Thea to kill. And then he's like, I'm father of the year. And she's like, what is wrong with you?
That is legitimately what happened. That is an accurate representation of what happened during the episode. It's like, Malcolm, in your own twisted little world, this is the best thing that you could ever do for your daughter, but really, no. Just so much no.
He's so awful. I hate him so much.
Yeah.
But so he realizes that he's, oops, really pissed her off. So it's like, it'll make you feel less guilty if we bring Sarah back because I made you kill Sarah. Like, father of the year. God, I hate him so much.
It's kind of like when you're so opposed to doing something in regard to what that'll do to that person. So, for example, putting someone who is completely dead into the Lazarus pit when you don't know completely what it's going to do to that person because it's never been done before. But you kind of think, I'm willing to put that emotional turmoil onto other people in order to kind of win me some points with my daughter. Like, that kind of flip-flopping, I was just kind of like, oh, you're so despicable, Malcolm. You're so terrible.
Well, this is the same man who drugged his daughter and made her kill someone that she knows very well and cares very much about.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to get free of Roz.
Yeah.
Because, I hate him so much.
He's a very... Right, this is the thing. He's a very self-serving character. And he's used particularly well as a counterpoint to all of the other characters. I just love to hate him so much.
I just hate him. I don't even love to hate him. I just hate him. I hate him more than Grant Ward.
Wow, that is a strong statement.
I know, but I do. That's how much I hate him. But yeah, so they put Sarah in and Nyssa like begs them not to do it, but they do it anyway. And we get more shots of Sarah's corpse because why not? And it looks like nothing's going to happen. And then Sarah pops out and she's completely feral like Thea was. But unlike Thea, she's not snapping out of it. So they have to chain her up, which sad, but she's there. But we don't know how much of her is there.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big question moving forward. And clearly why Constantine will be coming in.
Yes. Yeah. That'll be interesting. But also, we now have an answer for why the person who was dead in the premiere episode isn't going to come back.
Yes, Nyssa had some kind of chemical or something that her father came up with to destroy the Lazarus pit if it fell into the hands of the wrong person. So I thought that was a smart move because having the Lazarus pit could be way too convenient and, oh, there's no danger anymore because we can just drop you in the Lazarus pit. And so that ups the stakes again.
Yeah. It does, because now what's dead stays dead.
Yeah, so I thought that was smart. And it makes sense that Nyssa would do it because she was so against it and didn't have time to really stop them from doing it. And then she didn't want to see it done again.
Yeah. Time will tell over who was right and who was wrong, and whether the Sarah that we're going to see transitioning over to Legends of Tomorrow is the same character that we have come to love during Arrow.
We know she's going to have to come back to herself to some degree to actually be on Legends of Tomorrow, but for now, she's looking pretty rough.
I mean, the other thing is, who's to say that it's Sarah that came back?
Well, they did say that the Lazarus Pit is filled with all the souls of the people who have bathed in it.
Exactly. So who's to say that whatever is in Sarah's body is Sarah? We don't know that. There's no guarantee that her soul is the one that's gone back into her body.
And this is why Constantine is coming.
So, hey, I just rained on all of your parades. You're welcome.
Yeah, I think the next episode is going to be rough.
Yeah, it is.
It's titled Beyond Redemption, so there you go.
But also, after this episode, I get my baby back.
For one episode.
For one episode. For now.
For now. We shall see.
Yeah.
Yeah, if people really like it, maybe they'll bring him back.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
So yeah, I've really enjoyed the season of Arrow so far. I already think it's better than season 3.
Yeah, same. I think it's been great. And I really like... I both like that they've gone with full-on mysticism in certain ways, playing off some of the stuff they introduced last season. But then also removing some of it so that the stakes are even higher. So, yeah. I'm just so looking forward to seeing how the rest of this plays out.
I know. So, first 3 episodes of Arrow have been great, which is a nice change because not so loving season 3. So, good stuff there. And then we can move on to some Marvel. So, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode 4. And I don't know what else there's to talk about, but Andrew!
Oh my god. Oh my god. I have literally written... So, Caitlin wrote in the doc, just like so we've got some talking points, so we know what we're going to do. And... she basically put, who cares about anything but Andrew, with a sad face. And I decided to add my own discussion points after that, which were essentially, my tears flow like a river, don't look at me, don't touch me, fuck you, S.H.I.E.L.D., fuck you, Ward. Word for word, that is what I have written after Caitlin's point. And, yeah.
Well, basically, you didn't see the top of the body. So we don't 100% know that that's Andrew.
Yeah. But
maybe he took somebody out and then got out the back and dropped his phone in the process.
Ugh. It's just too stressful because I love him.
I do too. I'm just going to refuse to believe that that's Andrew until we get a total confirmation, because that would totally be something that they do. They're like, oh, there's a body. Look. And there's like, psych, wasn't Andrew.
Yeah, but the other thing is that we're not going to find out in the next episode.
That's true, which makes it so stressful.
Yeah, it's incredibly stressful. And the thing is that this fight against Ward doesn't need to be any more personal.
Right?
It Jeez. Really doesn't. It's already personal enough on both sides, whether that's a misplaced personal vendetta or not. You know, in the eyes of each character, it's personal. So it didn't need any more. It doesn't need any more motivation on one side or the other, really. But if they have killed Andrew, I'm like rioting for every episode until the end of the season.
I know. We lost such a great black guy last season. Stop killing them.
Yeah, please. They're not cannon fodder. Can you stop?
Seriously. Yeah. I refuse to believe he's dead until we get 100% confirmation.
Yeah.
That's just where I stand on it.
Again, the earliest that we're going to find out is episode 6. If we even find out in that episode, and if they don't drag it out for even longer.
Though I was really surprised that Hunter came face to face with Ward so soon.
Yeah. Actually, that did move a lot quicker than I'm used to with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And S.H.I.E.L.D. moves pretty fast.
Yeah.
I thought there would be at least a couple of episodes.
Yeah, because S.H.I.E.L.D. is quick with how they get through some of their plot points, but it's not, like, the Flash fest.
Ba-dum-ching.
Yeah. yeah, it just, again, I'm still not getting my head around, like, Andrew!
My favorite thing was, like, Ward's face when he realized it was Hunter, and then when May came in, he, like, shit himself. It was the best thing ever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that they said that we're getting this character that even Ward is completely terrified of, but, you know, I'd be scared of May if she started, like, coming at me, like, stalking me down and stuff. I'm not sure I'd be able to do much more other than, like, wet myself. That would be terrifying.
And then if she thinks Andrew's dead, there is nothing that is going to stop her from, like, ripping him apart.
Oh, God.
Limb by limb.
There would be no saving him. There really wouldn't. And the thing is that for a lot of people, that may have been, like, if they were on the fence about Ward before, Andrew is so beloved as a character that that may have been, like, the breaking point for anyone, like, being on the fence about Ward.
Can we also talk about the fact that he wants to be called director?
I know, but
and his obsession with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. Like, I think that's a really interesting aspect of Ward's character, that obviously he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D. for such a long time, and whether that was as a Hydra sleeper agent or not, like, he moved up the ranks pretty quickly, and he had quite a lot of ambition, so seeing that kind of transplant itself across to Hydra and him restructuring it and kind of having a direct parallel about, like, what S.H.I.E.L.D. is now versus what this new Hydra is, like, that for me is quite an interesting thing, this, like, strange obsession that he has with it. It's, you know, you may hate Ward, but at least that's quite an interesting parallel that they're drawing, because it's a direct parallel to Coulson.
It shows me how emotionally stunted he is.
Yeah.
And it's, ugh.
I know.
I hate him.
I know.
But not as much as Malcolm Merlyn. No, Andrew is dead.
Yeah, if Andrew is dead, then I may be slightly less in a love-to-hate-him kind of area with Ward.
Yeah.
Because I like Andrew too much.
I know, I love him so much. And what was interesting is we found out that this time Andrew actually left May.
Yeah, yeah. And May was kind of like, you abandoned me in Hawaii.
Yeah.
What? Why would you? Yeah, it just, yeah. I was kind of really shocked at that.
Yeah, I was too. And then May has this, like, pained response where she's like, well, we're even now.
Yeah.
Like, oh, ouch.
Yeah. So the whole point was for them to try and repair what was damaged in their relationship, and it was May really trying to make a conscious effort to right the wrongs that she had done, and she recognized it, which she may have recognized before, but she's very good at shutting that sort of stuff down. And to see it kind of flipped back on her, like, that was really painful.
Yeah, so, and it was surprising.
Yes, yeah.
I did not see that coming.
No, didn't see that coming. in a much better accent than actual Quicksilver, because they were all fake, terrible European accents.
Speaking of sad deaths.
Oh.
Okay, bringing this down. Let's, like, is there a happy moment in this episode to talk about? Not really.
No. No, it's, and I don't think next episode we're going to get much better either, because we get to find out at least a little bit of what happened to Simmons on the mystery planet.
Yes.
Ugh. I'm looking forward to seeing it, but I'm also dreading it at the same time.
It's going to be painful.
Yeah.
But another interesting reveal in this episode was Daisy's mad at Coulson for how much he's cooperating with the ATCU, which,
duh,
don't blame her. And I don't know why Coulson would ever be surprised about that. No. But they managed to track down an associate of Lash, who is their killer.
Yes.
Their hedgehog-looking killer.
Yeah.
And they find him, and this guy was on Supernatural, so I was slightly amused by that. Yeah. And they are going to bring him in, and Lash interrupts the convoy and kills him, but Daisy sees him walking off in the shadow, and she sees the shadow morph into a human form.
John.
What? So she's like, they're like, I don't know, it was either her or Mac, and they were like, he could literally be anyone, but he's not going to literally be anyone. He's going to be somebody.
Unless he can change what he looks like all the time.
That would be...
Then he could literally be anybody.
But I feel like he's going to end up being somebody that we're like, holy crap, you're Lash. You've been Lash this whole time.
Yeah, that is the kind of thing that Marvel would pull on us.
And then I'm going, wait, who is it? Who might it be? I don't know who it is, but I feel like it's somebody we might already know.
Yeah, let the speculation begin.
Yeah, so that was a shocking turn of events, and interestingly, he left Daisy alone. So
yeah,
she was there, which leads me to think that when he came into the hospital the last time, he was definitely after Lincoln.
Yeah,
because that was, he focused on Lincoln, and this time he killed his associates, so, and left Daisy alone in the car or in the truck. I was expecting him to come and face her.
Yeah, which makes me wonder if it's someone directly linked to Daisy.
It's Ward. I'm calling it now.
Oh, God. Could you could you imagine? Because there was that theory going around at one point about Hellfire, potentially Ward being Hellfire, which has quite likely been thoroughly debunked by the fact that Hellfire is going to be a Fox TV show now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but Lash has got to be somebody.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to be looking suspiciously and being like, are you him? Are you him? I'm going to be very suspicious now.
Everyone's a suspect.
And we know it's not Lincoln, and that's about all we know.
Yeah.
Because they've been in the same place, and that's about it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., why do you do this to us?
Yep. Yep. So, more trauma. This is kind of traumatizing, and Simmons continues to struggle.
Yeah.
And she spends time with Andrew in this episode. Andrew! But she is definitely struggling. And then she finally goes to Fitz and is like, I need to tell you everything. And then the episode ends. Because of course it does.
Of course it does. Nothing can have, can give you any satisfaction right now. It's all horrible emotions. And everything is terrible.
It's true. We can only laugh to deal with it.
I know, it's true. We have to laugh, otherwise we'd cry.
It's true. So yeah, those are kind of the main hits of this week, and they were traumatic.
Right, let's get on to movie news now that we've got all the TV stuff out of the way. So, first thing in, not so shocking news, not shocking at all, Marvel wants Peyton Reed back for the Ant-Man sequel. Considering how well Ant-Man did, not shocking. There's not really much more to say about it. That's it. Marvel want him back. He will probably come back.
Yep.
That's about all to be said. I mean, it'll be interesting to see him work on the movie from the ground up rather than taking over from someone else and having to, I guess, work around some of the stuff that was already there and bringing some, like, incorporating some of it and changing others to, like, fit it into the wider universe. So I think that'll be one interesting thing to see if he does come back. But otherwise, there's not much else to say on this other than Marvel wants him back.
And it's not a surprise because
no.
It did well. And
yeah.
I enjoyed it, so I'm fine with it.
The next little bit we've got is Tom Holland has been talking a little bit about playing Spider-Man, and he managed to injure himself on Civil War set. So he was kind of like, he said, no violence, it was my own mistake. I basically fell over and bashed my face in front of about 200 crew members, so not my most heroic moment. It was luckily just before my last shot, so they were like, roll cameras! I was getting into position, everything went wrong, and they still did the take anyway. It looks great, and they'll probably just CGI out all the blood, and yeah, I was very lucky. And I just like... it was really, really cute, because this was a video interview with him, and he's kind of adorable and hilarious and a little bit charming, and I really don't need those feelings about Spider-Man right now.
Get away, adorable Spider-Man, get away.
Yeah.
But it was the amazing Spider-Man, we have the adorable Spider-Man.
Yeah, but the whole interview is quite interesting, quite sweet. And quite amusing. So if you get the chance to jump on Hyperball and check it out, do. It's at least a nice way to see a little bit of what he's like in his manner. So yeah. Next thing we've got from the Marvel side is that they revealed the Blu-ray Collector Edition for Phase 2. So Phase 1, when that came out, was the suitcase with the Tesseract in it and all of that, which was quite cool. Phase 2 is like, they've literally just upped their game again with how it looks. It is amazing. It is an orb that contains one of the Infinity Stones, and I think it's the one that's from Guardians of the Galaxy. It looks like it, anyway. The one that the Collector kind of twists open and you see it. So, and then everything is inside it, and you've got loads of stuff again, like little character cards and bits and pieces. So inside it, all together, you've got, obviously, Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, Age of Ultron, and Ant-Man. Let's see. They did break it down. Where was it? So it's a gold-foiled page from a book of the Dark Elves, an ancient drawing from the Morag Vault, Avengers and Strike uniform patches, a replica of the Tony Stark tattoo from Iron Man 3, and there's some more stuff. I think there's like a brown file that I think is potentially the Winter Soldier's file, because it's all in Russian from what I can see. So that could be that. But yeah, it just looks really cool. And it'll set you back $219.99. So,
Let me just get out the money that I have.
Make it rain,
sitting around.
Caitlin, make it rain. And then lend some money to me so that I can buy it for myself.
Yeah, if only. It's very pretty, though.
It is very pretty.
All right, so moving from Marvel to DC, we just have a couple of quick things. Shocking nobody, Ben Affleck, or Batfleck, is interested in directing a solo Batman movie. So he said, if I could make it work, yeah, obviously that would be like a dream. The trick is, as to any movie, is to make sure that you, if you're going to direct it, that you can make it good. You got to have the right idea and the right take on it. Broadly speaking, it's something I'd be open to for sure. It's a very exciting idea, so... That's not surprising, because Ben Affleck's been doing a lot of directing work, and I think he's a pretty good director, so I wouldn't be opposed to it.
No, me either. I think we've discussed it a little bit previously, so yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah,
so we'll just have to see how the character is first. We're just basing it on not a lot yet.
Yeah. It's soon, though. You know, there's not that much left, not much time now before we get to see him in action, so...
Indeed. And then the other piece of DC news is we got a look at the Joker from Suicide Squad in full costume. And if you want to risk going blind, you should check that out. So he's got a purple scaled pimp jacket and a pimp cane and sweatpants, and he's barefoot. He's got tattoos across like his stomach, and he looks really terrible.
He does look really bad. Like, I understand them wanting to separate the character away from the Nolan Batman trilogy, and I understand wanting to set this in a completely different tone in regard to, like, how it's seen cinematically and in the character designs. But this is such a difference, and it just doesn't look that good. It really doesn't. I just keep looking at it and going, that's what they're going with? Really? Like, maybe he's gonna be amazing as the Joker when we see him on screen. Maybe it won't look so bad in motion. But this? It's garish, over the top. And yeah, okay, it's using a lot of the color scheme of the classic Joker from the comic books. But pimp jacket and sweatpants?
I know. Like, I don't understand. And then grills in the teeth, and I just, ugh. I am looking forward to a lot of things about that movie once we saw the trailer, but the Joker is not one of them.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. Hopefully it'll come back around and work out better in motion. But right now, like, there's, for the most part, I'm pretty happy with Suicide Squad and what I've seen from it so far, including a lot of the character designs and so on. But just, I can't get past this at all. It just, every time I see that little bit more of the Joker, I'm just like, they're going, they're setting yourself apart, and then there's being different for different sake, and one works better than the other.
Yeah. I'm also bitter that this movie made it so Arrow had to get rid of their own Deadshot, but
ugh.
Alas.
Oh, well. So let's move on to quotes of the week, our very minor bright spots in amongst all of the trauma. Caitlin, what was your quote of the week for this week?
Mine was from Arrow, and it was the adorable Curtis, and he was talking to Felicity, and he says, "Have you ever considered how ironic your name is? Felicity refers to the ability to find appropriate expression for one's thoughts, which is not exactly something you're particularly good at."
Brilliant.
I love him.
Yeah. It's just so spot on and beautiful. And yeah, I love those little gems of like hilarious moments in amongst like everything going to shit, essentially. Mine was from The Flash. So we've switched this week because we were the other way around last week, last episode even. And mine was when Patty and Barry and Joe are like kind of all out and together, and Patty's like, "Oh, sorry, I thought I stepped on an ear. I didn't. If I did, I'd be hearing things." And Joe is just like, "Oh, hell no."
He's like, "Oh God, there's two of them."
Yeah,
now.
Basically, that's his exact reaction, is like, "No, how am I gonna survive? There's two people with exactly the same sense of humor, and this is going to be excruciating for me."
That was quality. Yeah. And Barry is very amused by the whole thing.
Barry is a
great joke!
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing missing was him, like, flashing her legs and thumbs up, just being like, good job.
I think they're adorable.
Yeah, I think they are as well. Just that moment was hilarious. I thought it was great. And, you know, I can't resist a terrible pun, you know. Who can? Okay, let's move into Comic Corner, guys, because it's back. Yay! If you were looking forward to it returning after its break, boy, have I got a, probably not a massive surprise.
Danya has a treat for herself. Really.
Yeah, I figured my first Comic Corner back would be something that I would like you all to go and do as your homework, because it would mean a lot to me personally. Yes, guys, this is the Hawkeye Comic Corner. If you didn't see the tweet, I dressed up as Hawkeye over the weekend for a friend's birthday party. So I'm still feeling the Hawkeye vibe, the Hawkeye mood. So disclaimer, I set it to myself as a challenge to not include Matt Fraction's run of Hawkeye because I've already recommended it so much. And also not the Jeff Lemire 2015 continuation-ish of that. Because again, I have also recommended that previously. So here are my other Hawkeye recommendations. So the first one I've got is Avengers Hawkeye. So if you want an almost definitive collection of Hawkeye's origins and his relationship with Mockingbird, aka Bobby Morse, then this is the trade for you. It includes everything from his villainous debut in Tales of Suspense number 57 to some great standalone stories from across various anthologies that feature his often tumultuous relationship with Bobby. The big draw here, though, is probably Grunwald's 1983 Hawkeye series, because he really understood Clint and how to showcase his inferiority complex and his drive to become a better hero because of it. Next one I've got is Hawkeye Blindspot. This mini-series finds Hawkeye struggling with losing his eyesight just as his past starts catching up with him. The story revolves around his quest to find his mentor's murderer, and it digs up long-buried family secrets, another person gunning for his name, and a shocking twist regarding the reveal of the man who has become Trickshot. Next one is Avengers Solo. So this series fleshed out Hawkeye's origins just a little bit more, focusing on his relationship with the original Trickshot. So it finds Hawkeye mostly solo and without a team, which is a rare occurrence, as he takes to the streets to solve a conspiracy. It also featured some fascinating insight into how he views himself as an Avenger, building on some of the previous titles. Next one I've got is Avengers Assemble Volume 1. So I kind of have a fondness for Kurt Busiek's take on my favourite Archer. But Avengers Assemble delves deep into the question of who should and will be an Avenger, and puts some heavy scrutiny on Hawkeye's place in the team. Though it does re-establish Hawkeye's importance on the team, Avengers Assemble comes to an interesting conclusion for Clint and his choices regarding his future with the Avengers. And the last one I've got is Hawkeye vs. Deadpool. So this is the most recent addition to the Hawkeye continuity, other than Fraction and Lemire's series, and it slots neatly between the two. Short, sweet, and to the point, this is essentially a buddy cop team-up between the two characters, playing their wildly opposing personalities off each other to triumphant success. Basically combines Deadpool's fourth wall breaking humour with Hawkeye's more deadpan, straight-laced take. Absolute genius. Now, if only they go ahead and give me that Hawkeye and Daredevil team up, I'd be... Come on! It's got the most amazing setup possible. One is the eyes and the other is the ears. Like, that's the best joke. Like, the hilarious superhero funny pun that they could just... Yeah, I just really want it because I just really want it, okay? Right, feedback, because feedback, I love getting feedback, so not as much because it hasn't been too long between this episode and the previous one. So Naina Odedra, I think that's how you say your name, you can tell me off in another comment if I got it wrong, says, I love you guys and I love this episode, just finished listening to it, and I hope Donya, you are okay, smiley face. I am much better. I'm almost to the end of my course of antibiotics, so yeah, I will be over my chest infection soon, which will be great, but I'm feeling much better. I'm not as tired anymore, so the perks of going to see a doctor when you're ill and not letting it kind of get a little bit out of hand, which usually happens. I get told off a lot for stewing in my own illness without going to see a doctor. So, yeah. Do you want to get the next
one? Sure. So Andrew tweeted us and said, Sarah's body wasn't much of an issue for me, but I feel like they could have waited until they got to the Lazarus pit to show her. Which, you know, they gave us more shots of her body, so in yeah. case you weren't convinced that that was Sarah and that she's dead, there you go.
Yeah. We also gained a new follower between the last episode and this one. So, Hype Podcast, much like Selena previously, went, that awkward moment when you're not following the super awesome superhero podcast, Hero Hype Podcast, Shame Bell.
And they should be ashamed because Marma's on that podcast.
Yes, she is. But also a small plug for it. It's actually really fun. So if you're into more entertainment news than just superhero stuff, check them out because they basically cover the big news that has happened like across all fandoms every week. So it's good fun.
All right, Jewel says, I'd love to see Miss Marvel or Jane Foster Thor. I'm guessing that's in response to the mystery movies that we'd like to see.
Yes, I assumed that as well. So, you know, though I will say, if they're going to go Miss Marvel as in Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, like, I would love to see that turned into a TV series, possibly on Netflix. Like, I think that would be really, really fun. I'd like that. I think her kind of arc, her story would work really well as a TV series. But I wouldn't say no to
it. Did I tell you that I bought the first three trades of Miss Marvel? I haven't read them yet, but I did buy them.
I'm so proud. Oh, I'm so happy. You'll have to, when you've read them, you need to let us know so that we can get your opinions on them. And finally, Selena left us a comment saying, this week's ep of Hero High Podcast is called Oliver Queen Domestic Goddess. Sounds like I need to catch up. Hashtag arrow. Yes. Yes, Selena, you do need to catch up. I don't know if that means on the podcast or on Arrow itself.
She was talking about on the last hype that she wasn't really liking season one of Arrow, so.
I miss season one of Arrow.
Back when Oliver was a murderer.
I miss Tommy. I miss Tommy. That's what I miss him a lot, but.
How did Tommy end up as all Merlin's son? Ugh, Tommy's too good for him. Hashtag bitter.
Yeah. We need Marima back on just to talk about her Tommy feelings all the time. Right, we're going to still keep the previous question of the week because we need to give you enough time to get answers in. But we do have one response in regard to us asking what powers would you want if you were an Inhuman. So Cassie is totally on board with my idea of a superpower, which is wanting to teleport. So she says, totes want to teleport. No more wasted time with commutes. Being able to just travel and go around on a whim, it would be awesome. Yes. Yes, it would.
Telling you, you need to be able to apparate.
Yeah. It works across superhero powers and Harry Potter.
What could be better?
Yeah. But that's it. We will be back again later this week with the episodes that have aired this week. And then we're back on track. So, yay! Get ready to hear more of us. That's four episodes in quick succession. We're so good to you guys.
After, like, a several week break.
Yeah, that's true. We're, like, making up for it. All of our episodes for, like, the last month in, like, the space of a couple of days. But yeah, until next time, guys, I'm Danya.
And I'm Caitlin.
Enjoy the shows this week, and hopefully you guys all enjoyed the Supergirl pilot. So, bye!
Girl